Hello and welcome to Bowery Poetry Speaks, an audio series of talks and performances from our special Bowery perspective. At Bowery, we start every event with an Honor Native Land statement. We would like to acknowledge that Bowery Poetry Club rests on the traditional lands and waters of the Lenape people, and we give respect to the Lenape and their elders past, present, and future by speaking in the Lenape language, Anushik, which means thank you and welcome. Anushik.
In this episode, host John Taylor talks with Italian poet Franca Mancinelli, focusing on her new book, The Butterfly Cemetery, a bilingual collection of autobiographical narratives and personal essays.
A little girl would chase butterflies through an alfalfa field with her hands open like a net in the air, or she would catch them by their wings when they stopped on flowers. Held between the thumb and forefinger, they were like colored sugar coatings that she might have eaten. But it was enough for her to talk to them, barely moving her lips or murmuring in her mind, until the butterflies, resting on her shoulder, no longer fluttered off. They had become attached to her. And yet, not long afterwards, they would be inert, enfeebled leaves. After playing some games in which they responded, as if tame or drowsy, to all her desires, the little girl understood that the time had come to bury them in a place beneath a staircase where, inside a corolla of white pebbles, crisscrossed twigs, and flaccid flowers, she had created a small cemetery.
Su un prato d'erba medica, una bambina inseguiva le farfalle con le mani di retino, aperte nell'aria, oppure le prendeva per le ali, quando si fermavano sui fiori. Strette tra il pollice e l'indice come un velo di zucchero colorato, avrebbe potuto mangiarle, ma le bastava parlarci, muovendo appena le labbra o mormorando nel pensiero, fino a che queste, posate sulla spalla, non volavano più via, si erano affezionate a lei. E invece, non molto tempo dopo, erano foglie indebolite e inerti. Dopo alcuni giochi in cui, come assonnate o addomesticate, rispondevano a tutti i suoi desideri, la bambina capiva che era venuta l'ora di seppellirle, nel sottoscala dove, dentro una corolla di sassi bianchi, ramoscelli incrociati e fiori mosci, si era formato un piccolo cimitero.
My name is John Taylor. Buonasera, cara Franca Mancinelli.
Buonasera, caro John, e buonasera a tutti gli ascoltatori. Good evening to all of you who are listening to us on Trafica Europe Radio.
Let me join Franca Mancinelli in wishing you a good evening. What you listeners have just heard is an excerpt from her story, The Butterfly Cemetery, read first in my translation and then by Franca Mancinelli herself in the original Italian. It is the title story of her new book, The Butterfly Cemetery, a volume of prose writings published by the Bitter Oleander Press. I am delighted to introduce you to this Italian poet, who is considered to be one of the most original, intense, and deep-probing poetic voices to have emerged in Italy during the past 15 years. Some of you may already know her verse poetry and poetic prose, since nearly all her writing is available in English. I have had the deep and intellectually stimulating pleasure of translating her work, which includes her prose poems collected in The Little Book of Passage and her verse poetry gathered in At an Hour's Sleep from Here. Both translations have been issued by the Bitter Oleander Press. Simply stated, Franca Mancinelli is one of the most exciting literary discoveries that I have made in some 40 years of writing about and translating European literature. The motivation for this radio interview with Franca Mancinelli is, as I have said, the publication by the Bitter Oleander Press of her new book, The Butterfly Cemetery. This bilingual volume gathers her most significant prose narratives and personal essays from the years 28 to 2021. And soon, as an accompaniment to this volume, will arrive her new collection of verse poetry and poetic prose, All the Eyes That I Have Opened, a book that will be published in English in June 2022 by Black Square Editions. Titled Tutti gli occhi che ho aperto in Italian and published by Marcos e Marcos, this book was awarded the Europa Inversa Prize in 2021. Franca Mancinelli was born in 1981 in Fano, a town located on the Adriatic coast in central Italy. After studying in Urbino and then living in Bologna for several years, and while often traveling throughout Italy to give readings and participate in literary festivals, she settled in Fano once again in 2020. Her hometown is situated in the Marches region. This part of Italy is known for its beautiful hills and the dark profile of the Apennines, as she herself defines in a text comprised in the Butterfly Cemetery, this high mountain range visible as she looks inland from her perspective on the Adriatic coast. Known for her acutely crafted and existentially incisive poems and poetic prose, Franca Mancinelli's books have won several prizes and have been widely reviewed by the leading Italian literary critics and insightfully commented upon by major older poets such as Fabio Pustola, Antonella Aneda, and Milo De Angelis, to mention only those three poets whose poetry is also available in English. Moreover, the two aforementioned translations published by the Bitter Oleander Press, The Little Book of Passage and At an Hour's Sleep from Here, have likewise been very well received in English. Insightful reviews have appeared in journals ranging from World Literature Today and Modern Poetry and Translation to The Fortnightly Review, Reading in Translation, and The Times Literary Supplement. Writing in The Times Literary Supplement, the British critic Mark Glanville notably pointed to how Franca Mancinelli's quest, specifically in The Little Book of Passage, went, quote, beyond simple philosophical questioning. It is an existential struggle. She is a remarkably mature poetic voice, sincere and humble in its search for meaning, worthy of the awards and accolades she has been accumulating. Franca, let's begin by talking about The Butterfly Cemetery. The title story, which is also the opening narrative in the book, is highly significant in that it reveals one of the key personal sources of your writing and one of its salient themes, your discovery as a child of the phenomenon of death, your subsequent search for a deep and genuine way to consider death, to set death in perspective with respect to your life and to any human life. In brief, a new possibility of vision, as you often put it, in regard to your attempt, through writing, to delve into a negative, painful, or disturbing experience and draw from it a different way of looking at life, a means of seeing even more distinctly what has been given to you by the wound, the loss, the abandonment, or, in this case, the death of butterflies. This autobiographical story is set during your childhood. You recall how you would play as a little girl with butterflies.
Yes, The Butterfly Cemetery, the title of this book, refers to a childhood game. Turning back to this image after so many years, I realized that it also comprised what the experience of writing represents for me. By writing, we hunt for beauty. We try to capture it, to hold it firmly, forever, in our hands. But in this desire of ours, we do not take into account that we are taking away the possibility of flying, of living, from the butterflies. The beauty that we manage to bring to a halt on the page is actually dead. We are burying it with the same innocence and cruelty that children have when they play their games. Is it possible to write while letting beauty fly freely? For the time being, my way of looking makes me acknowledge a book as a butterfly cemetery, a place where, with all our love and care, we find ourselves burying what has been dearest to our heart, what has illuminated and guided our gaze. The dream we then have is that the beauty from this burial can somehow have another life in the reader's gaze. It is something like a faith.
In your personal essay, A Book of Poetry, A Living Structure, which is also comprised in the Butterfly Cemetery, you similarly write, "For me, a book of poetry is a lighting point, a possibility of vision, a brightness that reaches zones which just beforehand were inaccessible, having caved in under the accumulation of time and its happenstances. I write when something from the darkness beckons to be watched." Franca, the dichotomy of darkness and light, or gleams, as you have sometimes precisely put it, is another recurrent theme of your writing.
It's true that the dynamics of darkness and light are a central concern for me. Right from my first book, Malacruna, which you translated in At an Hour's Sleep from Here. This is probably because I still have to learn something important about the relationship between light and darkness. When I'm in the dark, I keep falling and getting hurt. Then comes the writing, like another gaze, like a celestial mother. A force greater than me reaches me, reconnects my fragment, embraces me entirely, just as I am. It teaches me to look into the darkness, to recognize the trace of a light that is traveling. This force that comes from writings guides me back to walking within life.
When speaking about writing and books, you often make analogies with light and darkness.
This is true. For me, a book is a point of light in the space of our existence. It contains messages that have reached us through the matter of language, often unconsciously. When writing, we are traversed by a light that we do not see in the present. It is a light that goes through our darkness and becomes visible only after a certain amount of time, when the book is printed, or sometimes even later, through a reader's eyes in which has lit up, as if by miracle, a glimmer that had continued to remain in shadow. It is surprising how much our eyes can remain tenaciously closed for decades to messages that we keep forgetting or diverting, as if they had been sent to the wrong address, while we are elsewhere, on the move, ever elsewhere. I have had the immense fortune of encountering your gaze, John, which has made me understand that translating is the highest act of love and care that can be carried out in regard to a literary text. Much more than a critic who often does nothing but recognize something that agrees with his or her own framework, or that allows him or her to put forward his or her own discourse, the translator makes a genuine journey through the matter of the language. Sinking down through its layers, meeting up with silence, the impossibilities of words, the losses and transformation of meaning, until he or her finds the way that leads him or her back to his or her land.
For you, Franca, landscape is also an essential element in several texts included in the Butterfly Cemetery. Reviewing At an Hour's Sleep from Here in Modern Poetry and Translation, the British poet Caroline Maldonado pointed out that you had, quote, absorbed and internalized your environment to express your deepest and most complex feelings. Maldonado added that, quote, Central Italy is earthquake country, and the fault line metaphor is central to your work, even at the level of your language itself, which, as you yourself say in an interview, can crumble like chalky stone and tufo without warning, to be shored up by your meter, as by the fine metal netting used to contain falling rocks. Let me ask you this. Are such intimately known landscapes, such as you evoke in, for example, your prose piece Inside a Horizon of Hills, not to mention many of your poems and prose poems, actually inner landscapes? In that prose piece, you define a specific countryside that lies a few kilometers from the Adriatic coast, a plain from which the two lines of hills that delimit the Mittoro Valley can be distinguished. My whole childhood was attracted to this unmarked limit between the plain and the hills, you explain. My imagination gravitated around this point where two worlds joined.
It's true. Those hills belong to a landscape that I feel inscribed in my soul. The hills of the marches of the area in which I live are so gentle that they make one think of the waves that remain visible on sandy sea bottoms. The hills are, in fact, a prehistoric seabed. I grew up looking at a line of hills that seemed to begin just beyond my grandfather's field. My horizon is a line of hills. Every time I look at it, I feel rekindling inside me that ancient wonder I experienced as a child, the plain and, suddenly, the land that rises, creating another world. Even now, when I walk in those hills, I feel something similar to a joyful air along with the protection emanating from that place, from the simple fact of my being there. I believe that we humans, not unlike trees, feed on the place in which we live, through the roots we have in the earth and those we have in the sky, as is recalled by the ancient image of the overturned tree, to which, as you know, John, I'm attached.
Indeed, Franca, you use this image of an overturned tree as one of the two epigraphs in the Little Book of Passage. You cite the French philosopher Simone Weil's words, "To tell the truth, trees are rooted in the sky."
Yes, how much effort I have made, how many difficulties I have had in recognizing my roots in the earth, in belonging to a place, to a house, to a body. Simone Weil's sentence came as an answer to this question that continued to haunt my life. Now I know that I can sink my roots in the earth only if I have a space in the sky where I can open my other roots. We do not live only in places that can be recognized on the geographical map, but often in places that have been created through our emotions, sequences, images that have belonged to our life or that we carry within us as a legacy. I also really like to live, whenever I can, in a fragile space into which the lives of other human beings and also of other life forms enter, a space that is shaped like a blank page.
This question of limits appears in different ways elsewhere in the Butterfly Cemetery. For instance, the limit can be something that impedes a human being from reaching his or her innermost reality, as you explain in your text, an act of inner self-surgery. Language also forms a limit, as you note in your personal essay, The Invisible as the Facing Page. Writing is a defeat, you observe, the acknowledgement of a limit, an impossibility. Language cannot fully restore to us our experience of reality. Its charge of beauty will always be limited by the words that can barely reflect it. Franca, let me ask you a question that is at once theoretical and personal. Once one crosses the delimitation, in whatever form it might have taken on, where does one arrive, or, at least, where does one hope to arrive? Is it perhaps a kind of origin or source that you are seeking, an invisible origin or source which you cannot see, but which you sense must be there?
Yes, I think that I indeed write in an impossible attempt to get beyond this limit, which exists both in the very nature of language and in our being. I am reminded of the ancient metaphor of writing as weaving. By writing, we try to weave everything together, to join ourselves back up into the unity of the cosmos. There is nothing new in all this. I mean that we are not actually creating anything. We are trying to recognize the texture of creation and to make it visible, to make it shine. It is rather similar to a game that we play as children, such as drawing up dots with a line so that a figure emerges. Everything is already there in the reality facing us. We only have to try to have eyes capable of recognizing and the possibility of carrying out that creative act, which is poiein, an act of making which enters living reality, which demands our presence in every moment in order to be.
You often mention this notion of poiein, this creative act that involves making. Our English language listeners are probably already thinking of Ezra Pound's famous concept of make it new, which he actually borrowed from Chinese Neo-Confucian sources, probably going back to the 12th century. But if Pound's slogan stresses craftsmanship, the making, your understanding of the Greek notion of poiein is very different. Before the making comes listening, attentiveness, an openness to that which seems to be outside the self, a receptivity to voices or words that do not necessarily come from knowledge or literary intentions. Significantly, Franca, when you begin a poem, the first letter is not capitalized. In your essay poetry, Mother Tongue, which is also included in the Butterfly Cemetery, you notably write, quote, "I believe that poetry is a voice that passes through us. For this reason, I always begin with a lowercase letter when I write. I'm not beginning anything. I've only caught something that I stammer in this broken language, which crumbles and breaks in silence."
Yes, this is something I've felt from my first book. Starting a poem with a capital letter seemed to be an act of pride and, at the same time, like building a wall. Instead, I prefer that the beginning of a poem remains open because it does not belong to me. After this, I respect standard punctuation. I use a capital letter after any period. But in the beginning, I like to honor the gift that I'm receiving. I am welcoming a voice that has reached me. I try to care for it on the page in this language which has come to me as an inheritance from my ancestors and which is still alive thanks to the energy of the millions of lips that have continued to pronounce it, to acknowledge its meanings. Thanks to my reading of Pavel Florensky, and in particular his fundamental little book called The Magic Value of the Word, I have developed this way of looking.
Indeed, the writings of the Russian thinker Pavel Florensky, who was an Orthodox theologian, a mathematician, a physicist, and much else, have marked you. There are also aspects of your thought that can be called instinctive.
Yes, the idea of language as a mother doe was already in me, instinctively. I thus gave this title to my second book, thinking of natural ease, which resembled the matter of poetic language. It is a very high-density substance, a generating ingredient, which can give life to many things, but at the same time is very fragile. If it is not welcomed in by one who nourishes and cares for it, it dies. I cook only basic meals, and alas, I would not be able to care for a mother doe. But I like to think of this yeast which can live for generation and which, by tradition, is not bought, but is received as a gift and is in turn given as a gift. Poetry is also a gift, and poetry, like a mother doe, asks those who receive it to do a job, a creative act of making, which is, in turn, a poiein. Poetry calls open everyone to shape and knead the dough with their own hands, to make their own bread, their own meaning, with their own experience and emotions.
What you have just said shows how and why you have by no means restricted your writing to the self.
Writing gives me this marvelous opportunity of living beyond myself on a threshold where I stop being myself and meet up with other living forms. It is a way of existing that is not allowed in everyday life, except at the cost of great, even fatal, danger. This is why, when writing, one can live at times within the perception of something similar to a recovery, to a reparation. It is as if language, our mother tongue, gives back to us a form of presence that belongs to us much more than that to which we are constrained to by the world. A presence closer to the origin, to the source of all things. Inside the creative matter of language, we can again live through the primordial experiences, the childhood of humanity, speaking through silence, stammering and interrupting ourselves, shattering thought, trying to find the names of things, staring into their eyes, awakening them as if from a long sleep.
In another personal essay comprised in the Butterfly Cemetery, you evoke your hometown of Fano and the statue of a woman, Fortuna, who stands in the central square. Around her extends a town, you write, that I could recognize and call with only two single syllables, almost two musical notes or two opposing answers. Fa, no, do not. The place name denotes unrest, uncertainty, like something which, once pronounced, would like to be called back into the darkness beyond the throat. It is in this language that I speak, the language that I've been taught by an inland ripple by the Adriatic. In the same prose piece, you depict yourself as being made of the almost never clear water of this mild, half-enclosed sea, which becomes furious every so often in winter with the shores that have constricted it. You often make such analogies, or even more so, appeal to an imagery of metamorphosis between human forms and landscape features, natural elements, or the attributes of animals.
Yes, it is for me a form of salvation and at the same time of reparation. It is like taking a deep breath, completely filling my lungs, after my diaphragm has long remained compressed. This is what I feel every time my human contours are again crossed by other forms of life, by the swarms of presences that are next to us, suspended, that are waiting to be or that have already been. In Hinduism, all this is acknowledged and made fully visible, and made fully visible. I am thinking of the images of their deities, who are often both man and woman, both animal and human being. They have several arms and hands that hold different objects. Behind the act that we are making, they also recognize what we have not done, what we have desired, what moves us, what we fear. It is all there, near us, around us, suspended. Quantum physics says something similar. I think that I love to write precisely out of nostalgia for this ancient possibility of being in the world that belonged to us, before monotheistic religions and positivist science. Basically, it is nothing more than an enhanced exercise of perception, the possibility of seeing inside ourselves not only the human form that has apparently developed, but also the tree and the animal that we have been, its flapping fins, its wings.
Franca, let's read one of your short texts, The Little Girl Who Learned How to Fly, which also describes a metamorphosis. Do begin to read the story to us in Italian.
Sul davanzale tornava a posarsi un uccellino che batteva i vetri con il becco, li sfiorava con le ali e poi volava via. I fruscii e i piccoli colpi che faceva sembravano le lettere di un alfabeto da decifrare. Veniva in ore diverse, a volte svegliandola la mattina, altre nel pomeriggio, mentre china su un foglio disegnava.
Now let me begin to read the translation of The Little Girl Who Learned How to Fly, in English. A bird kept alighting on the windowsill and pecking the panes with its beak, brushing the glass with its wings, and then flying off. The rustling and the small beating sounds it made seemed letters of an alphabet to be deciphered. The bird would come at different times, sometimes in the morning and waking her, sometimes in the afternoon, when she was bending over a sheet of paper and drawing.
Un giorno che aveva piovuto e lei era scesa nel giardino per guardare dentro le pozzanghere, vide riflesso quell'uccellino che veniva alla finestra. Si voltò indietro, guardò sui rami più alti degli alberi fino alla cima, sul prato in mezzo ai cespugli, ma non lo vide. Tornò a guardare nella pozzanghera più grande. Era lì, posato su qualcosa di invisibile. Non poté fare a meno di sfiorarlo, piano con un dito, per non farlo volare via. Ma appena infranse la superficie dell'acqua, lui scomparve. Non sapeva più dove cercarlo, se sul tetto o negli angoli più nascosti del giardino.
One day, after it had rained and she had gone down into the garden to look into the puddles, she saw a reflection of the little bird that came to the window. She turned around, looked at the highest branches of the trees, all the way to the top, then at the lawn and into the bushes, but couldn't spot the bird. She looked back into the biggest puddle. There it was, resting on something invisible. She couldn't help but touch it with her finger, slowly, so that it wouldn't fly away. But as soon as her finger broke the surface of the water, the bird vanished. She no longer knew where to search for it, whether on the roof or in the most hidden recesses of the garden.
Mentre pensava a dove potesse essere, iniziò a sentire sulle spalle un'inquietudine sempre più forte che non la faceva stare ferma in nessun luogo. La peluria bionda che aveva sulle braccia crebbe, si fece bianca, poi grigia e infine marrone. I bulbi dei peli si erano fatti d'osso. Le stavano spuntando piccole piume, come quelle di un passero caduto dal nido. Nel giro di qualche ora il suo piumaggio crebbe tanto che poté iniziare a esercitarsi nelle prime prove di volo. Correre e poi, raggiunta la velocità massima, saltare. I suoi salti la staccavano dal prato, la portavano sui rami più bassi degli alberi. Quando arrivò al tiglio, continuò a fare brevi voli dentro la sua chioma. A un tratto si ritrovò sulla cima, si fermò a guardare il giardino, la casa dove aveva vissuto, e puntò dritta verso l'azzurro.
As she was thinking about where it might be, she began to feel in her shoulders an ever stronger restlessness that kept her from staying still anywhere. The blonde hair on her arms grew, turned white, then gray, and finally brown. The hair bulbs had become bone. Small feathers were popping up, like those of a sparrow fallen from its nest. Within a few hours, her plumage had grown so much that she could start practicing her first test flights, running, and then, having reached the maximum speed, leaping. Her leaps brought her off the lawn, carried her to the lowest branches of the trees. When she arrived at the linden tree, she continued to make short flights inside its foliage. Suddenly, she found herself at the top. She stopped to look down at the garden, the house where she had lived, and headed straight for the blue. By the way, the Butterfly Cemetery has three sections. The book is divided twice by a blank page that shows only an ancient symbol of a butterfly. This was your idea when we were putting the book together, even as you used a spiral symbol on a blank page to divide the sections of All the Eyes That I've Opened. What do these blank pages with their symbols mean?
The blank pages give a rhythm to my books. They mark the rhythm of vision and breathing. As in any journey, we need a place to halt, to let what has entered our gaze, our listening, settle in. In this blank space, the life of anyone passing through the pages has the possibility of encountering the life that I have tried to translate into words. To me, a book without blank pages seems a deaf monologue, a house built for nobody, dark and without windows. Beginning with Mother Doe, my second book, I started inserting blank pages between written pages. Without the blankness, the meaning will not rise like Doe. For publishers, these blank pages often cause worries. Will readers perhaps take them for a printing mistake? Because of this, thanks to advice given to me by the poet Fabio Pusterla, I placed a spiral on each of the blank pages that give rhythm to my new book, All the Eyes That I Have Opened. This spiral is a prehistoric symbol that appears on our first stone page, and it refers to that movement which connects a beginning and an end and a beginning. As in these two lines, which I love, from T.S. Eliot's East Cocker, in my beginning is my end, and in my end is my beginning. This beginning end and end beginning, as I call them, are at the heart of all the eyes that I have opened, and also express my vision of poetry.
The spiral symbol on the blank pages, your implicit and explicit use of this beginning end and end beginning, your poetics are based on a cyclical view of being.
In fact, it ultimately seems to me that the greatest teaching that poetry gives us is this process of returning to a cyclical time of transformation in which every loss, every death, is nothing more than a movement towards life. A poem indeed lives in this polarity, in this electric current that is created between beginning and end, birth and death. With every end and beginning of a line of verse, each time that we end a line and go down to the next line, poetry is teaching us something that belongs to the life of nature, of the cosmos, and that we often forget.
What you've just said, Franca, reminds me of your sequence of poetic prose texts, A Line is a Lap and Other Notes on Poetry, which is also comprised in the Butterfly Cemetery. That particular sequence reveals the extent to which your writing is linked to everyday acts and the movements of your body. Writing is essential to you, and so is swimming. Let's read the opening text of this sequence. It indeed evokes swimming. You can begin in Italian.
Quando percorro avanti e indietro le vasche di una piscina, alla ricerca di quello stato di narcosi che mi coglie poco tempo dopo il ritorno all'asciutto, mi seguono inizialmente alcuni pensieri. Scorrono leggeri sulla superficie insieme alla mia chiglia, fluttuano appena sulla linea che guardo per non deviare. Per un'ora circa avrò soltanto alcuni gesti, con le braccia che a volte sembrano disegnare un arco deciso e tagliare l'acqua, oppure oscillare e cedere. Ripeterò gli stessi gesti fino a quando sentirò le spalle muoversi in un celeste che lentamente si solidifica. Allora risalirò dalla scaletta, ascolterò la doccia e il phon, e tornata a casa verrò richiamata nel fondo, dove si depone il governo delle mie forze.
Now here's the translation. When I swim laps back and forth in a pool, seeking that narcotic state that hits me a little while after my return to dry ground, a few thoughts initially follow me. They skim lightly across the surface, along with my keel, barely floating along the line I like to keep from veering. For about an hour, I will make only a few kinds of movements. my arms sometimes seeming to draw a clear-cut arc and slice into the water, or to waver and give way. I will repeat the same movements until I feel my shoulders advancing through a slowly solidifying sky blue. Then I will climb the ladder, listen to the shower and the hairdryer, and, once home, be called back to the bottom, to which my governing forces sink.
Alle prime bracciate, quando ancora l'acqua non è stata dissodata e i miei archi procedono incerti, mi sembra di continuare a scrivere su un foglio limpido, con tutto il corpo. Penso che si arrivi alla fine di un verso, come di una vasca, muovendosi all'interno di una misura. Una serie di gesti si ripete fino a che si raggiunge una sorta di equilibrio per cui sembra di non muoversi, ma di essere portati. Il fatto è che i movimenti sono già tutti scritti. L'unico pensiero è quello di aderire, di eliminare ogni intenzione che fuoriesce dal tracciato.
With my first strokes, before the water has been plowed up, and while my uncertain arcs are progressing, it seems to me that I continue to write with my whole body on a transparent sheet of paper. I think that one comes to the end of a line as if it were a lap, while moving inside a measure. A series of movements is repeated until a kind of equilibrium is reached through which one seems not to pass, but rather to be carried. Actually, all the movements are already written. One's unique thought is to comply, to eliminate any intention that swerves off course.
Anche se si arriva al bordo della vasca con un turbinio di rabbie e di rancori, nello stesso istante in cui ci si affida all'acqua, le passioni come scorie tendono verso il fondo, liberano i propri riflessi nel gioco della superficie. Con il roteare delle braccia e il battere delle gambe, poi sembrano del tutto dissipate. In realtà hanno obbedito a leggi più grandi dell'istinto e all'interno di quel rito di obbedienza si sono placate.
Even if one reaches the edge of the pool with a swirling of rage and rancor, once one's trust is placed in the water, passions sink like slag toward the bottom and free their own reflections to play on the surface. With the whirling of arms and thrashing of legs, the passions then seem completely dispersed. In fact, they have obeyed laws greater than instinct, and within this rite of obedience, they have calmed down.
Allo stesso modo, quando ci si affaccia alle soglie di un verso, non si arriva alla sua fine senza che lo stato emotivo che ci portava non sia stato in qualche modo addomesticato. Si scrive con la stessa cieca consapevolezza con cui si nuota. Ogni intenzione o slancio deve essere sorretto da tutto il corpo, approvato dalle sue forze e dalle sue riserve. Ogni gesto deve misurarsi con la necessità di toccare infine il bordo della vasca.
In the same way, when one stands at the threshold of a line in a poem, the end is not reached without the emotional state, which has brought one there, having somehow been tamed. Writing is done with the same blind awareness as swimming. Every intention or élan must be supported by the whole body, approved by its forces and reserves. Every movement must be measured by the necessity of finally touching the edge of the pool.
Non si sovverte la tradizione in un attimo, in un sussulto di immaginazione eccedente. Se mai nascerà un nuovo stile o una variante all'interno di quello codificato, sarà per un progressivo e lento distacco dai movimenti precedenti, attraverso prove calibrate, minime infrazioni accolte. Lo stile libero non esiste. Non si è mai liberi se si vuole nuotare.
Tradition is not overturned in an instant, in a fit of excess imagination. Should a new style be born, or a variant within a codified style, this will take place through a slow, gradual detachment from previous movements, through carefully measured experiments, minimal infringements accepted. Freestyle does not exist. You are never free if you want to swim. Franca, we've now given a sampling of the various kinds of texts ranging from prose narratives and personal essays that make up the Butterfly Cemetery. Let's tell our listeners how the book came about.
The Butterfly Cemetery is a composite book which collects more than 10 years of writing. It is an unexpected book which took shape all of a sudden, thanks to this long time period. The same thing happened to me as a child when I would play with butterflies. I would make a tomb of white stones for one butterfly, then another tomb, and suddenly I realized that I had put together a small cemetery. It is a special book because it was born first in English. It was born from the strength that your eyes gave me, John, which guided me to collect and find an order for this prose text written on different occasions and in different forms, some of them autobiographical narratives and others reflection on writing. This is how, like good busy beavers at work, we have arranged the branches of this dam of ours. Blank pages have also returned to the structure of this book. The book would have been too associated if we had divided it into sections with titles. A blank page provides an opening. It offers the possibility of welcoming something unexpected, which is passing through, in this case, a butterfly.
A butterfly indeed flies in our book.
Yes, we decided to revive an ancient Greek symbol of the butterfly, slightly modifying it so that it would suggest flight. This last trick was an intuition of our very astute editor and poet, Paul Birot. Otherwise, the stylized butterfly might have been confused with a cross. Instead, our butterfly is alive. It is flying through the air on the blank page before being captured, entering the piece of writing, entering the cemetery.
It's as if an element of nature participated in the writing of a text, a book.
Yes, this is what I hoped for at the end of the little book of passage, to let nature speak directly, to let nature have the last word.
Yes, Franca, in that beautiful final prose poem of the book you write, you're tired. You're making the buds break out. The bark is splitting apart, no longer resisting. With closed eyes, you keep fighting. The earth is a rock, crumbling into tiny pieces of gravel. It is a wall and a door. Keep sleeping. The leaves are speaking to each other like brothers. From the heart to the crown of the tree, the leaves are thinking up a sentence for you.
Thank you, John, for reading this text. I can add that Maria Lai, a great Sardinian artist, explains in an interview that while she was setting up one of her outdoor installations, the wind suddenly disrupted the order of her pieces, and she understood that the order had to be what the wind had decided. Like her, I also believe that art cannot be based on closed forms that prevent primal forces from entering them.
Another artist, Kiki Smith, is also very important to you. She generously let us use her tapestry, Congregation, to grace the cover of the Butterfly Cemetery. There is a passage in your personal essay, An Act of Inner Self-Surgery, in which you detail various drawings by Kiki Smith and, in particular, Congregation. You show how they participate in your search for the force of transformation that can come from a painful experience, for the possibility of vision that can result from reworking, through art or writing, such experiences. Let's also recall, as you have written elsewhere, that our English verb to congregate can indicate a group of animals that have come together as well as a religious assembly, a group of people who have congregated for a ritual. Kiki Smith indeed explores this deep connection between religiosity and nature. Let's read that passage from your essay, with you beginning in Italian.
Mesi fa ho visto, a San Gimignano, alcuni disegni di Kiki Smith, dove occhi si aprono sulla pelle di una donna dai capelli sciolti, nuda come una santa del bosco. Questa figura torna in altri disegni e opere, come un autoritratto nel tempo, e insieme una sorta di archetipo, di immagine guida. In una di queste porta appese alle braccia due gabbie vuote e sulle spalle posate tre civette, gli uccelli che hanno l'intelligenza della notte. In un altro disegno, due volti di donne, o forse uno stesso volto in diverse età della vita, a piccole tessere d'argento come polvere di specchio, polvere cosmica. Sono queste le lacrime, le nostre soglie, le nostre possibilità di visione.
Months ago, in San Gimignano, I saw some of Kiki Smith's drawings in which eyes open on the skin of a woman with undone hair and naked as a saint in the woods. This figure turns up in her other drawings and works, like a self-portrait over time, and at the same time, a kind of archetype, a guiding image. In one of these images, the woman carries, hanging from her arms, two empty cages, and on her shoulders are perched three owls, those birds that have the intelligence of the night. In another drawing, two women's faces, or perhaps the same face in different stages of life, have small, silvery tesserae like mirror dust, cosmic dust. These are tears, our thresholds, our possibilities of vision.
Ma c'è un'immagine di Kiki Smith che più di tutte resta come l'icona di una forza di trasformazione e ricongiungimento attraverso le lacrime, che altro non sono che conduttori, cordoni attraverso cui scorre la vita. E non è un caso che questa immagine sia una razzo, perché ci mostra proprio come siamo, intessuti nella stessa trama del cosmo. Seduta su un ramo di un albero, una donna nuda, forte del proprio stesso corpo, genera dagli occhi lacrime e filamenti colorati che si diramano congiungendosi agli occhi degli altri animali. Un pipistrello, una civetta, due scoiattoli, un daino accucciato ai suoi piedi.
But there is one of Kiki Smith's images which, more than all the others, remains the icon of a force of transformation and reunion through tears that are nothing more than conductors, cords through which life flows. And it is no coincidence that this image is a tapestry, because it shows us just as we are, woven into the same fabric of the cosmos. Sitting on the branch of a tree, a naked woman, strong in her own body, generates from her eyes colored filaments of tears that branch out to join the eyes of other animals.
Sospesa in una notte senza tempo, ci guarda, vegliandoci, continuando a generare il filo che ci tiene uniti. Le lacrime che versiamo sono questa possibilità di uscire dai confini dell'identità per tornare a essere attraversati dalla vita nella sua purezza. E questa è l'immagine che vorrei di fronte al letto, l'immagine che può guidarmi ad affrontare il buio.
She has the serene and firm face of an ancient divinity. Regal and unarmed, she rules over the primal forces. Suspended in a timeless night, she looks at us, keeping watch over us, continuing to generate the thread that holds us together. The tears we shed are this possibility of going beyond the boundaries of identity, to be crossed again by life in its purity. This is the image I would like to have on the headboard of my bed, the image that can guide me to face the darkness.
Thank you, dear John, and to all our listeners.
This has been a talk with Italian poet Franca Mancinelli, focusing on her new bilingual edition, The Butterfly Cemetery, coming soon from the Bitter Oleander Press.
You've been listening to Bowery Poetry Speaks, an audio series of talks and performances with that special Bowery perspective. This series is executive produced by Traffica Europe Radio. Thanks for listening.